Yes, so theoretically, I should go there now.
Regina's really good. Regina is really good. And the place is the same as it's been since the 1920s. So
Joel's giving us a thumbs down on that.
Joel doesn't know what he's talking
Joel,
about.
Joel, TripAdvisor, like everyone on TripAdvisor disagrees with you. So sorry, man.
Joel likes that crap pizza from up the street. And
this is a body that loves pizza.
Yeah. how you cannot like Regina is beyond me. So it's an authentic old style North End pizzeria.
Naturally, if it's the North End, they know how to make pizza.
We do only rank 7th on the best of U.S. pizza cities. New York is still number one as the best pizza city.
As a whole.
Like overall.
Yeah.
But if you want the best pizzeria with the best pizza experience.
Regina Pizzeria.
Got to come here. Go Regina.
Get it.
I like it. I'm on board.
Now I have to go. I had like a 10% off card that someone gave me on the street once and I just never made it over there before it expired.
They used to have
There's another one in like Brighton or Alston or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they used to have outposts all over the place.
Same.
Having been to the original and having been to some of their other pop-ups, the originals, I think, still got the original pizza oven.
And it's
like, there's just something about that location that's better.
I would say it's like those people that never clean their cast iron skillet because it keeps all the flavors of every omelet they've ever made.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Yep.
Tell me what coat I'm wearing for the next few days, Derek.
Oh, you don't even want to know. One of these actually makes noise.
It's that one.
Oh, there we go. All right. I know where I am now. I really don't. Your Boston 5-day forecast. Are you ready to bundle up, Shay?
I guess I kind of don't have a choice.
Yeah,
based on your tone.
Really, really, really don't. If you're going out tonight, kids, bring a coat, is what I'm going to tell you. Bring a coat. Bring a knit hat because temperatures are going down into the 30s in the city, below freezing out in the suburbs. So plan accordingly. Tomorrow, wind and a high in the mid-40s. Mid-40s, 40s, 47.
It was 67 on my drive here.
You're going to be about 41, 42 in the burbs. Tomorrow night, lows in the 30s once again. Hard frost, hard freeze up in the northern and valley locations as it will go below 32 degrees, well below that. Friday, we warm up again. It's going to be sunny, high around 60. And then we stay in the 50s on Friday night. And then Saturday, partly cloudy during the day. Might be some showers around. Highs in the low 60s. And then back down into the 40s on Saturday night. Sunday, high in the mid-40s. Low in the 30s.
That's how you know it's fall. When someone telling you the weather says, oh, on Friday it's warming up. It's going to be 60. That's warming up.
It's not that winter's coming, kids. Winter's here.
Yeah.
When we come back.
I hope you like that 4 days of fall.
When we come back, we'll get you caught up on question one right here on WMFO Medford.
Trick or treat till the neighbor's gonna die of fright. It's our town, everybody scream.
In this town of Halloween,
when hanging under your bed, teeth brown sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs, feathers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween.
In this town we call
it now, everyone's waiting for the next surprise. Round that corner, man, hiding in the trash can. Something's waiting now to pounce and how you'll scream.
This is Halloween,
red and black and slimy green.
Weren't you still, Bill? That's just fine.
Say it once, say it twice.
Take a chance and roll the dice. Ride with the moon in the dead of night.
Everybody scream, everybody scream.
In our town of Halloween,
I am the guy with the tearaway face.
Flash and born with that
and scream like a banshee. Make me jump out of your skin. This is Halloween. Everybody scream. Won't you please make way for a very special guy? Our man Jack is king of the pumpkin patch. Everyone hail to the pumpkin king.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. 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 Halloween.
This is Howard Scott on the scene for TV 12. We're at the Bijou Theater, where it's been reported that a man has gone berserk while watching a double feature horror program. The police are trying to subdue the man now. In fact, here they come. What happened inside?
Well, we got a 1040. He's gone berserk. Gotta be just beat him.
Could you tell me what happened inside?
Is this TV?
Channel 12. The film frightened him that badly.
Oh, yeah, it was a scary movie. I mean, he flipped out just when the girl took the axe and started to...
Harry, it was when the guy took the razor and cut
you, sir. Excuse me, what did you think of what happened inside? Sir, did you like the movie?
I'm gonna see it again.
I have here the little item passed out by the management to remind you that if you can't take frenzy of blood, that you better not come.
A double explosion of bloody terror, blood-spattered bride, and I dismember Mama, rated R.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Mr. Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock, and we love to have you chime in. So please give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. And it's that time of year again, kids. Election season. And we're talking about a... Massachusetts ballot question one, which has
question one has really been
stirring some pots and ruffling some feathers.
Oh boy, are they spending money on question?
They said it's the most expensive and closely watched ballot measure in this year in Massachusetts.
Yeah, and in the country, by the way, because if they get away with it here, they're going to try and do the same thing other places. So question one, this is the one of the nurses, right?
Yeah. So basically, it would. The law would basically, if you say yes, it limits the number of patients assigned to nurses on a given shift or in a given rotation.
So basically the way that it's spelled out is less than 3 patients. So 2 patients, basically.
They I say that's such a silly way to word that.
They say less than 3 patients per nurse in intensive care units, emergency rooms, and intermediate care, which is where you go between the ICU and a regular room. One nurse per patient during childbirth, 6 patients per nurse for postpartum care. Two, if the child is in intermediate care or
NICU,
neonatal intensive care. Kids, I guess we don't care. Four patients per nurse.
Kids, whatever.
Yeah, four patients per nurse in pediatric care. I guess the kids are less of a problem than the adult patients, whatever. And five in rehabilitation and psychiatric. Like that. I don't know how the psych nurses got the short end of the stick on this one.
I was going to say, if anything, you'd think a lot of that sounds backwards to me. And this is, well, the reason that this is that this ballot measure has been very controversial is that typically if there's a ballot question that affects the affects someone's specific profession or lifestyle or something, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're all pretty united on it. Yeah. It's all like everyone on question one has, I've seen so many posts on Facebook being like, nurse friends, how am I supposed to vote on this?
Well, here's the interesting thing. For those who don't know, this legislation was written by the nurses union. The Massachusetts Nurses Association, a labor union, wrote...
My mom's a member.
Wrote this legislation. They wrote the bill. And they put it to a vote of the union members and 84% of the union members. So when you hear that statistic that 84% of the union of nurses support this, what that really means is 84% of members of the Massachusetts Nurses Association supported the bill as it was written being a ballot question. It doesn't mean that 84% of the nurses support,
like, in general
passing the bill, because Mass Inc. did a poll earlier this week and found that 45% of nurses plan to vote no.
Mm-hmm.
48% of nurses plan to vote yes. 7% are undecided.
Well, and I think first of all, I think that the point that you made about the distribution described, a lot of it doesn't make much sense to me. And don't get me wrong, obviously people in the ICU should have the utmost quality of care.
Absolutely.
But I don't know how many people you've known in the ICU. It's a lot of it is checking their vitals.
People in the ICU aren't getting up and threatening people like
exactly.
mental patients.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Is like, how can it be? How is the psychiatric nurses?
Sorry, psych nurses.
Yeah, like, why are the psychiatric nurses who actually have a patient that could harm other patients getting spread so thin when the ICU, like, ICU nurses, a lot, don't get me wrong, they have to spring into action immediately if something goes wrong, but it's mostly just monitoring vitals and writing down their vitals and doing rounds. That's why they're called rounds. You walk around and you see happening with
that. But now here's the other side of this, okay? The numbers that are specified in this legislation are inviolable. And this means two things. Number one, if a nurse goes on break, or if a nurse goes to have lunch, or if a nurse enter shift early or whatever, there has to be another nurse there
to pick it up
immediately to pick it up so that you do not exceed this number. Number two, if you have a sick child and there are already four patients assigned to the pediatric nurse, the hospital cannot admit your child. They either have to throw out one of the existing patients, get another pediatric nurse in there, or send you away. They cannot bring in a fifth child under penalty of law.
Yeah, that's the risk with making this law is, and in doing research on this, there are a lot of parallels between the concept of what it's like to be a hospital nurse and being a server. And I'm not in any way saying that being a server is as important as being a nurse.
You ask me that when I'm sitting in the bar waiting for a drink, and I'll tell you it is equally as important. Every bit as important.
Okay, well,
servers do God's work.
We do keep you fed and buzzed. So.
I adore my servers. I have massive respect for my servers.
And we adore you, Derek. But, well, the parallel that I made in my head, the more and more I read about this, the more it was just so crystal clear, is it's difficult in this sort of unpredictable, volatile is the wrong word, but unpredictable, varying profession to have such cut and dry rules like that. Because, like, for example, I have a shift tomorrow. I'm going to be assigned probably six tables to be a part of my section. And if people get sat at those tables, I will be expected to serve those people. If fewer than, sometimes fewer than that amount of people come in, sometimes we have an extra dining room. Sometimes way more than that amount of people will come in and I'll have to take two extra tables outside of my section. Nursing is the same sort of thing where it's like there are some nights where it's like, oh, it's a slow night. I only have one patient. There are other nights where they'll come to you and say, can you handle this?
Yeah.
And any nurse worth their salt, just like any server worth their salt, will say, yeah, I got it. Or be honest and say that they can't. But either way, putting such a strict regulation on it is not helping either sides. Is not helping the nurse or the patient. Especially because, I mean,
well,
I don't know about you, but most nurses that I know, my mother included, other than having a steady job that will always be needed, deep down, fundamentally, it's about wanting to help people and wanting to be there for people and wanting to make people more. When I was having trouble and had to be in the ER, like when, I don't want to get into, but I have a condition that is very painful sometimes with my lady parts and where they hold the eggs. Anyways, but there was one time I had to be in the ER overnight and a nurse, it was a pretty slow night, and the nurse just sat and chatted with me and like watched Friends with me.
Yeah.
And like they got into this for amongst the other more, you know, baseline reasons or like obvious reasons of stability and good income, flexible hours, depending, but they get into it to help people
and
to have to force a nurse to be like,
and let's be reasonable and admit,
no, you can't let that kid come in.
And admit that there are hospitals that understaff on nurses to save money.
Oh, absolutely.
And you need a mechanism to deal with that. Now, weighing that on the one hand, on the other hand, as this law is written, what happens if you have a major bus accident on a Sunday evening, typically the quietest time in a hospital, and there are only two nurses on staff?
They're supposed to do nothing?
Are we going to let the people sit outside the hospital and bleed while we wait for more nurses to come in? Are you going to move those patients to hospitals further away, potentially jeopardizing their care, so that you can get them to a place where there are enough nurses available? Yeah. There is no provision in this legislation to deal with a catastrophic event.
Which is the failure of this.
Huge oversight.
It's a nature, again, you're exactly right. And that's my point as well, which is that the nature of this profession is unpredictability. And I think a lot of the nurses that do support this are the ones that feel overworked and feel spread too thin, which I obviously feel for. But like I said, it's being a server, you can feel that way sometimes too. You don't want to feel that way. You don't want unpredictability. You could have become a data entry person.
It is a reality.
There are plenty of jobs that don't change rapidly.
And it's also a reality that some hospitals understaff and are not fair to their nurses. And there should be a mechanism to deal with that. I think we all agree with that. The other aspect of this is we have an organization. It's part of our state government, but it's not appointed. They're independent. The Massachusetts Health Policy Commission, and they review insurance price increases. They review hospital mergers. They review all kinds of things. They were created at the same time that we got Romney Care.
Mm-hmm.
They looked into what this would cost, and they solicited information from hospital executives throughout the state. And the estimates that they came back with, $667 million to $949 million annually.
Jesus.
That's not over 10 years. That's $750 million to nearly $1 billion a year in additional health care costs in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
And not to mention the way that it would affect, like you were touching upon, the way that it would affect, say, I go into the hospital because I cut myself.
Yeah.
I go to the ER because I cut myself. Instead of waiting an hour or so, I'm going to wait 4 hours because we have to wait for all these other patients to get discharged because there aren't enough nurses to fall into the legal requirement. And I think what bugs me about this And obviously, like I said, I have all people understand what it's like to feel overworked, to feel spread thin. But it actually reminds me of a conversation I had with my mother recently, where my brother's been a nurse for 40 years. Sorry, Mom, I don't mean to age you if you're listening. But my mom's been a nurse for 40 years, and she has done like every kind of nursing you can do. Like, she worked in maternity. She worked in the ER. Like, she's worked in like the super high pressure nursing situations. She's been a visiting nurse. She's been a nursing consultant. She now has been a school nurse since I was 10. So she's been a school nurse for like 22 years. And I had a conversation with her recently where we were watching something where the setting of a scene was the hospital or was the ER. And she was saying, like, I could never do that again. Like, at the time it was fine. Like, at the time I was up for it, but now, like, I can't imagine going back to that. And I think that there's something to be said for that, in that, like, it would be one thing if this was like, I'm trying to think of something to compare it to, like fast food workers trying in New York City trying to get $15 an hour,
which is reasonable
because that's all they're gonna do.
Yeah, they're not mandating that there needs to be five fast food workers on the job at all times.
Yeah, but like that's all they're gonna do. It's like, if they're not working at that McDonald's, they're gonna work at the Wendy's a block away,
right? And they're still making the same crap money, and they're like, yeah, we need bus fare.
Yeah, whereas,
like, we need to pay for the bus to get to the job.
Yeah, whereas with nurses, as I just illustrated, there are so many different areas of nursing that you can pursue. There are so many different areas of nursing that exist that it really, if you have that much of a problem with sometimes being asked to take a ton of patients because, like you said, a bus crash came in or something, then maybe working in the ER, working in the ICU, being an operating nurse, maybe that's not for you. Maybe it was, and you've moved on, like my mother did. And there's no shame in that. There's nothing wrong with that. People are not all cut from the same cloth. But, and again, not trying to tell you how to vote on this. I can't be more clear about that. But I do see, and that's the difficulty with the way that laws are written. Because, like you said, bills are written, rather.
There will be benefits in patient care from this.
Absolutely.
You will get more intensive care from this. And you will be dealing with nurses who are not, you know, strung out and being pulled in too many directions. And I think we all agree that we need some sort of remedy for those health systems that are deliberately understaffing nurses, that are deliberately keeping nurses on later than they should be, making them work too many hours, making them work too many shifts, making them take care of too many patients, because that creates bad patient outcomes.
I would say, well, that, I think that, and I agree. And the answer to that, honestly, basically this bill arose from hospital greed, if you will, or hospital administrator, not administrator, but hospital owner greed. Because the real solution to this would be hire more nurses, have more of them on at one time, so that even if there is a giant bus accident, it doesn't matter, because you're prepared for the storm. You're prepared for the whirlwind of patients you're about to have.
Practically speaking, with insurance companies the way they are these days, the hospital administrators can't afford to do that.
Mm.
But that aside, there are those hospitals that are deliberately understaffing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been to them. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, and that is something that we need to address. A yes vote on Election Day will put these new mandatory requirements for nurses into effect. A no vote will leave the law alone and as it is. 855-915-9636. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Chase Belain with you for about another 35 minutes. And then On the Town with Mikey D is here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. When we come back, interesting study says Americans are afraid to speak their mind. Doesn't sound like any Americans I know. We'll get into that right after this here on WMFO Medford.
Believe it or not, I was a beauty queen. Yeah, I was the toast of the rock and roll scene. I had all the friends that money could buy, but I would trade it all in just to be a Now, what's the problem?
I'm just not satisfied with my career.
But I thought you really wanted to be a nurse.
I do, but my work here isn't exactly what I expected.
Hmm. Have you considered the U.S. Air Force?
The Air Force needs nurses?
Sure they do. The Air Force has an excellent healthcare system.
Hmm.
If you're a registered nurse, the Air Force has a good-paying, responsible job for you.
Really?
Yeah. There's even an option for specialization available for those who qualify.
Gee, that sounds like a great way of life.
Oh, you bet it is. See your Air Force recruiter for more information.
It rests on 13 acres of earth over the very center of hell. The last house on the left. Here is the first motion picture to offer to the daring a look into the final maddening space between life and death. The last house on the left. Caution. To avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only a movie. Only a movie. Only a movie.
Sights and sounds far beyond anything you've tested. The last house on the left. Offered by Sean Cunningham Films Limited in color. Caution. To avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only a movie. Only a movie. Only a movie.
Take as only much as you can.
Only a movie.
A ranger station.
I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
I put out my campfire and Smokey Bear hugged me.
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Yep, he's just letting you know you did good.
Bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
I'm gonna let you go now.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, but when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call and chime in at 855-915-WMFO. And, ooh, Derek. New study says that we're all scaredy cats to speak up for ourselves.
Well, it sort of hints at that. It does say that Americans in general, that there is a new group in this country known as the exhausted majority, which is so fed up with all of the...
Such an apt way of putting it.
With all of the infighting and commercial grade stupid on display, primarily through social media, that they're just checked out. They're like, nah, I can't, you know, I don't even want to talk to anybody about anything anymore. This study was put together by an organization called More in Common. Nobody knows anything about them or who they are or where their funding comes from, which to me reads very suspiciously like a George Soros front organization, more of his fun social engineering. And that is further bolstered by some of what they do in this survey. Now, the methodology is YouGov, the website, YouGov, conducted online surveys of 8,000 people, because online surveys are accurate. And then they hired some academics to look at it and to interview another 30 people in depth. And then there were some other, they physically spoke to about 100 people. So they took these 8,000 survey responses and they broke Americans into six or seven different groups here. Mm. And this is where the bias begins to show. Their breakdown identifies 19% of Americans as hard left and 25% of Americans as hard right, with 26% totally neutral and 30% as moderates or what they call passive liberals. Now, this is
passive liberals.
Passive liberals. So you got your centrists, you got your passive liberals, your traditional liberals, and then your what they call progressive activists. And over on the left-hand side of the spectrum.
So progressive activist is the leftist.
There's about 11% of these
people. But
that's
like the furthest to the left.
Right. They're the furthest to the left. Now, the progressive activist.
I'm probably a passive liberal.
The progressive activists.
If I believed any of this.
Are nonsense. Identified as extremists for the purposes of this study. You get over to the right, and then you have moderates, and then you have traditional conservatives, and then you have devout conservatives, okay? I think they call them devout.
Oh, that wording is really, really choice.
Yeah. I'm trying to see what it was. Devoted conservatives, I'm sorry. That's the phrase that they use.
Devoted conservatives. Oh, my God. They're not even hiding it.
Now, here's the interesting thing about this. Oh, wait, remember I said over on the left, you have traditional liberals, mm-hmm. and then you have the extremists are the progressive activists. Over on the right, they lump in the traditional conservatives with the devoted conservatives, and they identify both of those groups as extremists. So that right there tells me we got some kind of bias going on here, because if you're doing this right, then you should have your extremists out on the edges. And you should
thus
have
the definition of extreme.
Exactly. So if you're going to put like evangelical Christians in the extremist category, I can't help you. Those people are not extremists. Extremists are people like the Proud Boys and the Aryan Nation and some of the other ridiculous, you know, white supremacists.
I would say people who are like, I hate you if you aren't exactly me.
Yeah. God hates fags. That what the Baptist,
Westboro Baptist Church.
God, they certainly go on the
guys.
List. Yeah, we know who they are. Okay.
Yeah, like when you hear extremists, I have friends from college. I use the term friends loosely, but I have people I know from college who are like very far right Republican. I would never in a million years refer to them as extremists.
Right.
Like ever.
So. The about 8% of Americans are progressive activists. Okay, that's the extreme over on the left. And then there are 6% who are devoted conservatives. Now, this is where this gets interesting. Because if you look at the way that they break everything up, mm-hmm. they're basically saying that 40% of Americans are conservative or conservative-leaning, 34% are liberal or liberal-leaning, and 26% are in the middle. I don't disagree with the 34% liberal. That's correct. That is a number that has more or less stood the test of time in this country. 40% conservative is way off because historically, 32 to 33% of Americans are conservative. So even for that number to go up to 36 would represent a seismic shift.
Yeah, like with the amount of citizens we have in our country.
Yeah, that would be a seismic shift in the American political landscape. Really good news for the Republicans heading into the midterms.
Well, I also think that it's, I think the best word, it's irresponsible to attempt to delineate things like this because it falls into the problem that I have with the two-party system is that human beings are complex. Like, as much as I know you always give me guff calling me, like, Susie Liberal. You've never called me that. Please don't start. But you know what I'm getting at. There are a lot of things that
No, you're Becky with the Democrat here.
I'm going to punch you in the face. But there are a lot of things that might be considered conservative opinions that I hold.
Right.
I remember when it occurred to me, like, I was registered as a Democrat, and then I looked at what I was declaring to the universe that I believe, and like half of it I was like, nope, not this. And I think that that's the failure in this, is that it's basically being like, you are this percentage of people is exactly this. This percentage of people is exactly this. Like, it's you can't do that. We're all very unique. Well, not all. Some people are cookie cutter buttheads,
right.
But I'd say a large portion of us are very unique thoughtful, differently opinionated people.
But when you get out onto the edges, when you get into that that 8% that is progressive activists or that 6% that is devoted conservative, now we're into NPC territory. These are not thoughtful, nuanced, well-rounded human beings. These are ideological agitators who have been at each other's throats for several years now.
And ironically, actually mainly don't know what they're talking about.
Correct. Primarily in the online sphere. So they looked at not just American attitudes on some core issues, but attitudes within these different groups on these core issues. And basically what they found is this. When it comes to sort of the, I don't know what you want to call it, the big issues of the day, the hard issues of the day, they pretty much came up with a 51-49 split among all Americans on the topics of immigration, sexual harassment, and discrimination against Muslims. There was a slightly broader split on one other question, which I forget exactly what it was. When you get into how individual groups feel, the progressive activists are 100% on one side, and the dedicated or the devoted conservatives
are 100% on the other.
No, they're more like 91-92% on one side.
That's why this is absurd. Is like, where are you pulling those numbers out of your butt? Like,
they actually surveyed people.
Like, I know they surveyed people, but at the same time, with this sort of thing, 8,000 people does not an accurate survey make.
We're extrapolating, obviously. 8,000 people is a much bigger sample size than you're going to get in most places. And keep in mind, people answered these questions without being put into boxes. They put the people in the boxes after the questions were answered. Mm. And they identified who's who, you know, based on a variety of responses and things like that, to come up with these different groups. Now, the interesting thing that they find here is 68% of Americans now say they can only express what they think among, quote, people who are like me, end quote, if they're talking about race or Islam. That was where the 52-48 was, by the way. It was on the topic of race. 73%, 3 out of 4 Americans, will only discuss their true feelings on immigration with people like themselves. 7 out of 10 Americans, 70%, will only discuss their true feelings with people like themselves on gender issues. 80% of Americans, 80%, see political correctness and hate speech, political correctness and hate speech, as problems in American politics. This is the exhausted majority that they're talking about. Yeah. And that 80%, interestingly, is pretty much who's left when we separate out the people on the wings.
Well, and that's always the problem with it. And I think that I was talking to my father about this the other day. Facebook has not been helpful in quelling this problem.
Facebook is where this lives.
Yeah. And I think that that's the exhausted majority. That's where a lot of it comes from, is originally it seemed innocent enough to, and I'm guilty of it myself, but it seemed innocent enough to discuss politics on Facebook, because it's like, well, if I'm friends with this person, maybe we can just have an intellectual, like, they can't believe anything too insane. Maybe we can just have an intellectual political discussion. And then all of a sudden they would say something horrible, or say something that sets off the trigger in your brain of, I'm never getting through to this person. I'm never, not that, I mean, it's like people arguing about abortion. You'd have a better time banging your head against the wall, because you're not going to change someone's mind. But you can at least have at least theoretically, I once thought that you could have an intellectual conversation without jumping down each other's throats and becoming nasty.
When we come back from our 2 weeks away from the usual topics.
Mm, yeah.
In the first week of November, we are going to do an election wrap-up. Mm. And we are going to talk about Facebook. And we're going to talk about social media. So we'll do our election wrap-up, and then we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about social media.
Oh,
because
I'm going to drive you even more crazy than usual.
Well, no, you're not. Because what has happened, and a big part of the problem is the way that Facebook is set up and the way that Facebook gamifies extreme opinions. You are rewarded for being extreme on Facebook.
Yep.
That is how you obtain likes and
comments.
On
whichever end, too.
And Facebook is a game where whoever gets the most likes and comments wins and gets to feel best about themselves. What has happened in this country? And this it took me a while to realize that this was going on. It actually came out of a conversation that we had last week. You remember when we talked about Yohar Tsarnaev and and his idiot brother, whose name I don't remember and probably shouldn't, other than it was Tsarnaev and he was an idiot? It
began with a T. No, it didn't.
No, you're thinking of Tashfeen Malik.
No, it was Tamir.
Was it? Whatever it is. Who cares? It's not worth remembering.
True.
Because he did nothing of value in this world. We will recall that the two of them were self-radicalized.
Tamerlan, sorry, it was going to bother me.
And they were self-radicalized by watching videos on YouTube that progressively drew them deeper and deeper and deeper into a toxic ideology that became their entire world. Because they saw so much of it, and because they plunged themselves so deeply into it, they came to believe that this is the way the world really is. This is exactly what is happening on social media to average Americans. Facebook is doing this to us. YouTube is doing this to us. And I can give you a lot more insight about exactly how it's happening, but you're going to have to stick around for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is something I think we could use both segments to discuss.
Yeah, we're going to break this down, and we're going to get into this, and I'm going to tell you what's happening and maybe help you pull yourself out of it if you are being self-radicalized. But that's what's going on.
Well, it's crazy, too, to think. I wrote my college thesis on Facebook and how it changed the way that we as human beings communicate. That was in 2008.
Yeah.
In the past 10 years, I could write another 50 pages about it.
This study paints the picture beautifully of what's gone on, because we've got these extremists out here screaming and yelling at each other, fighting in the street with sticks, attacking each other constantly on social media. Every day there's a new viral video going around. And everyone in the middle is just sitting there and they're like, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm sick of this.
Yeah, just like, I'm going to post a puppy video because this feels like a more worthwhile use of my time.
And if people were just sick of it, that'd be fine. That'd be okay. Like, check out. Like, go read the guide for voters and walk into your voting booth and be happy. But that's not what's happened. Mm. Because the people on the edges have decided that this is a zero-sum game. And you are either with us or you are against us. And everyone in the middle is now in the crossfire. So no matter what you say, one side or the other is going to come at you.
Yeah, I've noticed
maybe
that.
Both.
I've noticed that, especially in the last month.
Our goal on this.
I even said to someone the other day, I was wondering why everyone's gotten like so, even more so than usual, like aggressive, opinionated, jump down your throaty on Facebook. And then I was like, right, midterm elections are coming up. All of a sudden, everyone's a political scholar. That's what someone yesterday, and it was completely unrelated to the post that I put. He was talking about, I think I told you before the show, he was talking about how unfair he thinks it is that there are certain guys in Hollywood who've been thrown under the bus, and Kavanaugh have been thrown under the bus for behavior that wasn't even illegal, and now like these women just feel like talking about it and they get ruined. Thank God for I could have handled it on my own, but thank God for Mayron, because he hopped in and was like, sweetie, stop talking.
That is a force of nature right there, Mayron Pagani. You do not want to wind up on the wrong side of that.
But I ended up saying to him, like, you know, I kept just saying, you know, like, you can't really have an opinion on this unless you've actually been sexually assaulted. You don't know what you're, like, you can't really, I can't believe, like, I was trying to be so polite, and then he finally said, like, well, I mean, I'm just defending Aziz Ansari, because that's how it came up. He was talking about Aziz Ansari and how he got unfairly thrown under the bus because he, like, acted inappropriately on a date. And I was like, that's not unfairly thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
Like, that's, if you're a celebrity, you have to watch everything you do. Everyone has to watch everything they do, but particularly celebrities.
Did he do the bad thing? Yes. Okay. End of story.
Yeah. And first of all, he was like, it derailed his career. I'm like, no, it didn't. Aziz is fine.
Did he do the bad thing? That's the only question I have. Did he do the bad thing?
But then I finally said to him, I was like, I'm sorry. I've been trying to be incredibly polite, but are you really defending men who got called out for their inappropriate behavior in the entertainment industry on the post of a woman in the entertainment industry? Like, is irony totally lost on you? Like,
yes.
How, it's like people's tact has just been erased, especially when they're hiding behind a computer screen.
Our goal on this show is to be hated by everyone on the edges.
I say, 855-915-WMFO. Give us a call.
If you are a progressive activist, if you are a devoted conservative, if you think free speech should be silenced, or if you think all the black people should be sent back home and we should build a wall and we should have mandatory transgender surgery for everybody, please feel free to hate us.
Yeah.
Because we don't agree with any of that.
I was going to say, because you're not a friend I want anyhow.
We're in the middle over here. We're with you, exhausted majority, and we're trying to make sense out of this as best we can.
Yeah, that likes to actually just talk things out and analyze things instead of just blindly following something hateful and ridiculous.
And in a couple of weeks, I promise you, we are going to explain to you how we got here and maybe even have some ideas on how we can get out of this. And get back to being fellow American citizens again, which would be nice. 855-915-9636. On the Tell Mikey D is coming your way in a little over 10 minutes. But before that, the strangest things of the past week and our favorite things from the past week right here on WMFO.
Word up.
Medford.
Hey everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
MFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at the Big Picture, but before we do, we want to tell you what's hot, which is our favorite thing from the past or coming week. For me, I just found this really funny. Apple has released a new version of its bagel emoji in the latest update to its smartphone software, and it has subsequently caused public outrage because of the controversial design of the bagel.
Can America ever hope to find its way forward in this world of inaccurately designed bagel emojis?
Jeremy Burge, who's the chief officer at Emojipedia, tweeted a look at the updated emoji on Monday after Apple had announced earlier this month that it would be adding over 70 new emojis and emoji design changes in the next update. While a wide variety of the emojis were shown in the release, the preview of the bagel emoji outraged many bagel lovers. Users posted to Twitter earlier this month to complain about the lackluster appearance of the bagel, with many calling for a more appetizing design. Social media users weren't the only ones participating in the bagel debate, as companies expressed their own stances. Cream cheese maker Philadelphia tweeted a poll asking followers if a bagel without cream cheese was a #sadbagel. Over 13,000 Twitter users responded, and 82% said yes.
It's a branding opportunity, kids.
Yeah, my favorite tweet about this comes from downtown Josh Brown. He works for CNBC, who said, I'm organizing a march in New York City against Apple's Just Reveal bagel emoji, which comes out with the next iOS update. It looks like something you get from a cardboard box in the freezer section at Walmart. This insult will not stand.
You know, they should all go down to that all-glass Apple store and just put a schmear of cream cheese on the glass.
That would be like the perfect... It would be like the guy who changed the Hollywood sign to Hollyweed.
Yeah.
I always like very like meta interpretive protests.
You get 1,000 people putting a schmear on that glass, it's gonna be covered.
I was saying it'll take like a minute.
Yeah. Let's all go down to New York and huck bagels at the Apple store. that's what we need.
But not frozen ones, because yuck.
Last night, big film screening. I am beyond excited for this. Mm-hmm. If I even get a chance to see it. They Shall Not Grow Old made $731,000 at 247 screenings across the United Kingdom. It was your only chance to see it in the theater right now, last night. They Shall Not Grow Old was made by Peter Jackson. You might know him from the Lord of the Rings trilogy, or perhaps the Hobbit trilogy.
Yeah, I think I've heard of him, whatever.
Or perhaps Dead Alive, if you're more like me. He was given a commission by the English government to take World War I footage and try and restore it. So he took all of those same servers that he used to create Gollum and King Kong and all these other things. They scanned all of the film. They used the computers to take 10 frame per second film and make it run normally at the new 30 frames per second that we all do. Yeah. So the computer adds frames in there. So once they've done that and got it to run at a normal speed so that everyone isn't jerky and bouncing around, they cleaned all of the film up and they colorized it.
Oh, snap.
The net result is high definition picture that looks as good as anything that would be produced today. There are clips of this available online. If you look up They Shall Not Grow Old, you will see them. If you've seen World War I footage before, which mm-hmm. most of us have at this point, what he has done is nothing short of miraculous. You will get an entirely new appreciation for this footage because the people now look human. Yeah. The settings now look like things that we recognize.
I was going to say, that's part of why I loved studying film in college. Other than that, I watch movies instead of read books most of the time. But that's the thing is, everyone's like, you copped out. I was like, no, I genuinely love film. Like, and that's one of the things is looking into, like when I took classes about film production and film restoration, about being able to do things like that. Like, I'd be interested to see, now I want to search through my newsfeed and find it. I'd be interested to see if Peter Jackson had anything to do with, someone else posted, it was New York City in 1910, but it wasn't colorized, but it was stabilized and what's the word I'm looking for? It was stabilized and enhanced.
I've seen it. I don't know if it's him or not, but
but it's the same sort of idea.
He's the leader in the technology right now, and what he has done and what it means for the future of film preservation and film conservation is astounding. Now, because it did so well last night, there were no plans for any international releases or anything like that. Because it did so well last night, and because there was so much interest in this, there is now hope that there is going to be an international release of this film.
Oh, dope.
I cannot wait.
The thing I was going to say,
amazing.
I would absolutely see. Well, and the thing that's truly remarkable about being able to do that is I think a lot of times we separate ourselves from people of the past in our brain just because the pictures and videos we see look so grainy and makes it seem like it's like another planet that they're from. But then you see it when that sort of treatment has been done to it and it's like, oh my God, like that dude looks like the guy I liked in high school. Like it really reminds us that they were just human beings. Just
look
like
up the footage on YouTube. It will blow your mind.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at the Big Picture by telling you that's the thing that happened, which is the weirdest story we could find from last week. And we're going on down to Florida with this one. Two former police officers in Florida will serve a year in federal prison for framing a black teenager for burglaries that he did not commit.
Oh, bad luck, guys.
Yeah. Court records show Espice Game Park, which is crazy, this is a tiny community, I've been there. Espice Game Park officers Charlie DeYube and Raul Fernandez were sentenced yesterday by Miami federal judge They admitted to being part of a scheme to frame the 16-year-old, get this, so that the police chief could claim a perfect rate of solving burglaries in the city. The judge insisted on prison for the pair despite plea deals calling for house arrest. Former chief Raimundo Etisiano faces up to 10 years in prison after pleading guilty to the more serious civil rights conspiracy charge.
Well, he has a perfect arrest for getting busted, or a perfect record for getting busted now as well.
Yeah,
so
we
can
right?
put that next
he
to
He got him himself.
Next
yeah.
to his perfect arrest record. Good on you. Iowa. Brandon McVeigh woke up in critical care and started trashing Mercy Hospital in Council Bluffs, Iowa.
What?
Staff said McVeigh got out of bed and started throwing things, eventually breaking four desktop computers and leaving the critical care unit covered in broken glass. McVeigh was in critical care for treatment after eating a Tide Pod.
Oh, God, that sounds about right.
Another reason not to eat the Tide Pods, kids. Apparently, they make you go crazy.
I was going to say, that's what I love. You said another reason not to eat the Tide Pods. It's sad that we need more than one, which is it's a freaking laundry detergent pod.
Another reason.
Don't eat something like that.
Not to eat a Tide Pod. Please do not eat the Tide Pod and then trash the critical care facility. Other people may need it. It's, you know, it's Iowa. What else? There's not much else to do.
I was going to say, honestly, of all the states that I drove through, Iowa, like, you know, I kept a photo blog of it.
Yeah.
The most interesting thing I found to take a picture of in Iowa was a little statue that says, "You're in Iowa," at a rest stop off of the highway.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it, yeah.
Kansas.
I was like, Kansas, at least the corn is prettier in Kansas.
Well, Kansas, they spend all year freaking out about tornadoes. And they got growing corn.
I was
going to
say, well, that's why Nebraska, that's what I always say. Like, I remember when I outran that tornado in Nebraska, my mom was like, weren't you scared? I was like, yeah, but afterwards, I was kind of grateful because otherwise I just would have been bored for 8 hours.
Right. Like, Indiana.
It gave me something to do.
Indiana, they spend all year growing corn, talking to Jesus, and watching basketball. That's what you do in Indiana. It's like basketball and Jesus. It's what we got.
I would say that was the one place that I couldn't access Tumblr.
Iowa?
At their public library because it was an unsavory site and had a block on it. I was like, Tumblr? I said Tumblr, not Pornhub.
Yes. Yeah.
What's happening here?
Iowa, you grow corn, and every 4 years, some political candidates show up and harass you, hoping for a vote. That leaves you 3 years to sit around without much to do. Except wait for the political candidates to come back.
And eat Tide Pods.
That's a lot of time to be eating Tide Pods, is what I'm saying. Next week, special edition, we'll be talking about Italian horror movies. So if you're into that, even if you're not into that, check it out. We're going to have fun. Chase Spillane will